The Financial Sense Lifetime Planning Program. Here's your host, Jim Poplava.
Well, as an American, you're probably hoping the pandemic is behind us. After 2 years of lockdowns, wearing masks, is it over and are we safe? Joining us on the program are Dr. McCullough and John Lake. They're authors of The Courage to Face COVID-19. Doctor, where do we stand right now with COVID? I know we had Omicron, and I think in Los Angeles, they've gone back to mask mandates. So where do we stand presently? Do you know?
We're completing the second Omicron curve. It's almost an after curve, like a earthquake where there's an aftershock. So recall that we had the wild type alpha outbreak. That was New York, Detroit, finished up in Milan, hit New York and Detroit. We had that longer alpha wave that went through Dallas and a lot of the Midwest. That settled down. And then we had Delta. And Delta started August of last year all the way through nearly the holidays. And Delta was abruptly cut off by a huge Omicron spike. Omicron shut off Delta because it out-replicated Delta 70 times faster than Delta in the nose. And then it also closed the immunologic door on Delta. So once you had Omicron, you couldn't get Delta. So Delta got edged out. Viral strains are competing with one another. We finished the Omicron outbreak in about January. We were back down. And now there's been this secondary wave. And thankfully, it is already on the way down, both new cases, hospitalizations, and deaths. And it's been what's called subvariants. Omicron had about 30 plus mutations. And so it left opportunities for lots of permutations. So we've had the BA2, BA4 and 5. And so people have gotten through the Omicron. So that's where we are now. We're actually on a downward slope on cases. Most people know that masks, you know, been removed from airplanes. They just stopped testing on international travel. That's where we are, Jim.
So given that, seems like the mutations have been weaker. I mean, Omicron, not as bad as Delta or the original COVID-19. What about the administration is talking or warning about fall? Typically, when we get into the flu season, is there a further risk that we could spike up again as we head into flu season?
I don't think so. This virus is not following any seasonal patterns that we can see right now. It basically finds pockets of susceptibility. As I originally published, I published a paper on this in 2020. I said, listen, it's not spreading like a typical seasonal flu. It finds pockets of susceptibility. You know what my next worry is on this? Is going to be back in the nursing homes. I'm already hearing reports on this. Again, pockets of susceptibility. The vaccine doesn't seem to matter right now, as you've pointed out. Pretty much, if you've taken the vaccine or not, you're equally as likely to get the virus.
Yeah, that's the interesting thing. The CDC just came out and basically said that if you got the booster, you were more likely to get COVID versus those that are unvaxxed. Can you speak to that?
It is true. And there's three analyses, Kampf, Beatty, and Subramanian, that showed the more we vaccinate, the more it backfires. So the more we vaccinate, people are more likely to get it. And that is true. I think right now the world case study is Portugal. They're very heavily vaccinated. They got the worst caseload. Israel previously, UK, etc. Countries where they don't vaccinate very much, like the Central African countries, very little COVID. So the vaccines are backfiring, and it may be because they're weakening the immunity. That's what the NIH study showed by Froman and colleagues. When we vaccinate, we install genetic code for the lethal Wuhan spike protein. And so the body is layered with the spike protein, takes over a year to clear it out, and the genetic material is stuck in the body for months. And I think the immune system is just taxed. So it doesn't provide immunity against COVID. In fact, COVID has an easier time infecting the vaccinated.
Now, what about some of the data, in fact, sort of corroborating what the CDC is saying? Walgreens released some data, and in that data, they said this was from April 19th to the 25th. They said that those who had two doses 5 months or more ago, 23.1% tested positive, and those that got the booster, 26.3% tested positive. So Walgreens data seems to be supporting some of the data coming from the CDC.
It's true, but there's one confounder in here, just to be fair. Many of the unvaccinated, like myself, I didn't take the vaccine, but many unvaccinated, it's because we already had COVID. So we already had a degree of protection. A lot of the vaccinated, they never had COVID. So they were still susceptible. So I think that's behind a lot of statistics. In Canada, for instance, majority of people in the hospital or of dying of COVID are fully vaccinated. Same thing in UK, South Africa, elsewhere. And it may be because the reason why the unvaccinated look so good is they've already been through the infection.
And as more people are vaccinated, as more people have had COVID, I know doctor in our own office, the people that got COVID first were the unvaccinated, including myself. I had Delta. And then now just about all the employees that have been vaccinated have come down with COVID. So does this sort of weaken the position for further COVID-19 outbreaks?
I think it does. At some point in time, it's indistinguishable from a common cold. The case example is children. Do you know our CDC came out in February and said 75% of the kids have already had it based on all their data. And most of the parents, they never knew it. The kids didn't even have a symptomatic syndrome. So that's wonderful for the kids. You know, we've had no major school outbreaks since schools have been back together. No credible serious case of childhood spread to teachers. The kids are in great shape. And keep in mind, that's without vaccination. The kids are in great shape.
As we look at how we have changed with the virus, when this first came out, we were learning to deal with it. It began with gloves, and it went to masks, and it went to vaccines and mandates. What can we learn from the way we handle this? And the reason I'm bringing this up is the historian Niall Ferguson has talked in his new book about doom, the politics of catastrophe, that we need to be better prepared. What can we do to better prepare should another pandemic break out?
For a respiratory illness like this, we learned that gloves don't work because it's not spread on the hands. Hand sanitizer doesn't work because it's not spread on the hands, or it's not spread by pizza boxes or things like this. We know hazmat suits don't matter because it's not spread on clothes. We learned that masks don't work because air goes around the mask too easily. The one thing we've learned that really, really works, Jim, is virucidal nasal washes. This is so important. It's the most important thing I've learned. It turns out the virus goes through masks and around masks, and it settles in the nose, the nasal passages, and it replicates there for about 3 to 5 days. So you have a chance, once you've been exposed to the virus, to actually knock it out in the nose. And the way that's done is by taking 10% povidone iodine. That's the brown iodine liquid you could buy online or at the grocery store that we use to sterilize wounds. 10% povidone iodine. Take a half a teaspoon of that in 1.5 ounces or a shot glass of water, pinch of salt, and a little spray bottle or syringe over the sink, squirt it up in the nose, sniff it back, and spit it out. Do it twice on both sides, gargle with the rest, a good 30-second gargle. That is proven to work. 12 clinical studies, 3 large randomized trials, reduces the chances you'll ever get it. Also, markedly reduces the period of time you're contagious so you don't spread it to your loved ones in the house. And then thirdly, reduces the intensity and duration of symptoms. Very, very effective, far more effective than a vaccine or even the drugs. I mean, this is really wonderful. If you can't tolerate the iodine, one can dilute hydrogen peroxide, just that 3% hydrogen peroxide you have in the house in the brown bottle, 3/4 teaspoon, again, in a shot glass or 1.5 ounces of water, same protocol. There are some over-the-counter ready-made solutions. One calls Cofix RX. That one works fine. Another one is called Clear, X-L-E-A-R. And then the last one is colloidal silver. So there's a variety of things, but people have actually not been taking care of the nasal passages. They've been preoccupied with taking pills and shots and what have you, but the problem is actually in the nose.
Yeah, that's amazing. I have a client who's avoided getting COVID, and she nebulizes with iodine and hydrogen peroxide.
That's another effective strategy. Lou Goyle's iodine, a couple of drops in a type of nebulizer. Now, you don't want to overdo it. We don't want to see people getting iodine toxicity or swallowing things. But I can tell you, Jim, I've learned from this. When I travel now, I always have one of these bottles because when you're in the plane, you get to the hotel, you may feel like maybe you're coming down with something. Get on it right away, zap it up in the nose like this, and you can head it off before you get sick. And it works for any cold, Jim, not just COVID. It works for any common cold. Most important thing I've learned.
Now, let's move on and talk to your book, The Courage to Face COVID-19, Preventing Hospitalization and Death While Battling the Biopharmaceutical Complex. Tell us about the book. What are the key points you're bringing out in your book that our listeners should be aware of?
Many of your listeners would recognize me now. I'm probably one of the most visible physicians in the world. I set the record with Joe Rogan on the most downloads he's ever had on the Joe Rogan Experience. I've met all kinds of celebrities, been on Tucker Carlson, Fox News. I'll be on Fox News tonight with Dan Bongino. People ask, well, how did Dr. McCullough go from being a, you know, a practicing academic doctor to being a public figure? It's in the book. The book is a story. It's a narrative trying to explain a complex reality of how I grapple with this, how I worked with others, divide treatment protocols, show that they worked, and how I and my colleagues were surprised when there was active suppression of early treatment. Well, there was a series of actions taken by a variety of stakeholders that actually made it hard for us to treat patients, that worked to promote suffering, hospitalization, and death. How did the White House get involved? How did the U.S. Senate get involved? Where are we now? Where are the perpetrators of, in a sense, this group crime? It's all in the book. It's a gripping narrative. John Leake, who I partnered up with, is already a best-selling author. He's an award-winning author, and he's written a page-turner. It's unlike any book out there. It's not a medical book. It's not going to drag people down with a lot of medical data. It's well-cited, and it's completely factual, but it is going to tell a story, and it's fun. You know, one of the fun chapters, he has a lot of fun names for the chapters, Tim. One of the chapter names is called Cuomosexuals.
Never heard that term.
Well, it actually is about Andrew Cuomo and his brother, Chris, because these were all these public characters. And remember, Cuomo, he actually won an Emmy Award for his COVID briefings. And then how did he fall from grace? How did his brother, who was a CNN anchor, we saw him throughout the pandemic. What happened there? What happened to all these characters? It's in the book. It's a must read. People are enjoying getting contemporary history that's accurate, but in the format of a readable story.
Which makes it much more easier to understand how this thing unfolded in the various stages that we went through, but also some of the characters, as you mentioned, the Cuomos, there's been others. You know, one of the things that really strikes me, Doctor, is this the first time, at least I have experienced in the medical profession, where, for example, I had the Delta variant and I treated it with ivermectin and a couple other things that I took, like Z-Pak, and then I took something for brain fog. But when I went to renew my prescription, the pharmacy would not honor my doctor's prescription. I've never experienced anything like that. And especially, as you know, Joe Rogan took ivermectin when he got COVID, hydroxy, and a number other of therapeutics. But I've never experienced that in a life where a pharmacy would not honor a doctor's prescription.
There has been an active campaign against anything that works in COVID, Jim, anything, including the nasal washes. By the way, there's been emails out to doctors, don't you dare recommend nasal washes. They don't work. There was an active campaign against hydroxychloroquine, active campaign. Ivermectin in the second year, active campaign. It was launched by the NIH and the FDA and the American Medical Association, which actually vowed to abolish the use of ivermectin. Well, let me tell you, the nasal washes are standard of care worldwide, particularly in Pakistan, India. And you know that ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine in several dozen government guidelines worldwide is first line. They cleared out the hospitals in Mexico with it, India, elsewhere. Ivermectin is quite diverse. There's been a series of basically fraudulent studies trying to use ivermectin for a very short period of time. The most recent one that was released called the Active 6 trial. A very small trial, underpowered, has no chance of success, and gives ivermectin for 3 days at a low dose. That's not how we use it. Just as you pointed out, we typically use it 5-10 days. Some protocols out of Yale, they use it for 30 days. So there's been an intentional efforts to try to actually not provide ivermectin to Americans. And now, even though we have Paxlovid and molnupiravir, they're being undermined. You know, there are papers now saying, oh, Paxlovid doesn't work and it didn't fail in prevention. And there's Paxlovid rebound. There's all kinds of emails to doctors about the flaws in Paxlovid. The monoclonal antibodies, which I've used, are safe and effective. They're undermined. They've been sequentially pulled off the market, theoretically, because the virus has changed. The only thing that's not undermined in this entire pandemic response is the vaccines.
That's amazing, because when you think of a vaccine, at least, you know, I've grown up as a kid, I got the mumps vaccine and various other things. You think of getting a vaccine as preventative. If you get the vaccine, you don't get what you're getting the vaccine for. That has not been the case with this vaccine. And yet they're suppressing alternative therapies. I've never seen that before, where the government has gotten involved, you almost feel like there's a conflict of interest here.
It's true. In our book, we indicate that, in a sense, there's a vaccine syndicate. It's the World Economic Forum, World Health Organization, CEPI, which is formed by the World Economic Forum and the Gates Foundation, Wellcome Trust, NIH, CDC, FDA, Wuhan Institute of Virology in China. They're all involved in a complex collaboration to mass vaccinate the world. And at the same time, they're suppressing early treatment. You're right. The vaccines only have one FDA EUA claim, and that is to try to prevent COVID if you haven't had it. That's the only claim. They've never been shown in randomized trials to reduce hospitalization, to reduce death, to reduce really any clinical outcome. Rand Paul, on his recent set of questions to NIH Director of Allergy and Immunology Branch, asked him point blank, have the vaccines ever improved any outcome in children like hospitalization and death? Answer is no. And then he says, well, why are they even being proposed for children? No answer.
Yeah, that's what I don't understand, because kids, as you mentioned, many kids have already had it and their parents didn't even know it, because kids don't react in the same way as, let's say, somebody 65 or even 45. And yet they're just approved, the FDA just approved vaccines for 5-year-olds. I don't understand why we're doing this.
No one understands it. The FDA testimony was excellent by presenters. Dr. Lindley from Texas presented the position of the World Council for Health. The World Council for Health represents 70 international groups of doctors and other key leaders. They are calling for a recall of all the vaccines, that they've failed and they're not sufficiently safe. And Dr. Lindley made the case very clearly. There's no way on earth that the vaccine should ever be used in children. So the FDA has gotten the feedback. And if they push forward, they're doing it against the will of doctors and patients.
You know, it's amazing, because once again, I had the Delta variant, and when I see my doctors, they insist on me getting the vaccine, and I tell them, why should I get it? I've had COVID. I've got natural immunities. Can you speak to that for those that have had COVID, where, let's say, the medical establishment is insisting they get the vaccine even though they've had it?
The doctors seem to be in a trance. My doctor did the same thing. He said, are you going to get the COVID vaccine? I said, I already had COVID. It's too late to get the vaccine. And then he looked at me kind of stupefied. And he said, well, yeah, I guess you're right. It's too late for the vaccine. Doctors seem to be in a trance. Remember, once you've already had the illness, there are multiple studies showing take the vaccine, you're going to be harmed.
Yeah, because why would you kind of mess with your immune system? I want to move on to something that would be important. What would you tell individuals to do that have not gotten the vaccine, they haven't had COVID? How can they keep their body's immune system healthy enough to help them to weather any kind of virus or anything that might come along?
People need to spend time outside exercising, fresh air, no masks. Fitness. Most people need to lose some weight and get fit. I know I did that before COVID and I was able to pull through it fine. You don't want, now's not a good time to be carrying a lot of weight and be inside all the time. Get outside. Getting outside also helps the body convert vitamin D. Most people should actually take supplemental vitamin D. There is an exquisite relationship, Jim, between vitamin D and being free of COVID. Matter of fact, there's a meta-analysis showing that if we achieve levels of 50 in the bloodstream, there's almost a zero chance of COVID. So I check vitamin D levels in patients. Most people need 5,000 international units a day. And there's even randomized trials suggesting in the acute treatment of COVID, we go to higher levels. I don't think any of the other supplements chronically really prevent COVID outside of vitamin D. But fitness, weight loss, staying away from sugar, starches, and saturated fat, I think that's a good way to go.
So are you telling me that I should stay away from wine?
You know, wine is controversial. Remember, it raises HDL cholesterol. A lot of business guys like you, Jim, you like to swirl the glass of wine. But overall, alcohol has an unfavorable balance because it's related to dementia, macular degeneration, atrial fibrillation, liver disease, cancer, high blood pressure. It's just too many things with it. And the biggest thing about alcohol that I always explain to my patients, it disrupts sleep. And it may help put you to sleep, but the quality of sleep is always less. And people do not really know what good sleep feels like until they're 28 days off alcohol.
Good point. So, doctor, in conclusion of your book, tell me the key point you would want people to walk away when they read your book.
The book is a page-turning, gripping narrative with a beginning, a middle, and the end. And I think the reader will land at the conclusion that a giant crime is underway. And the crime are almost certainly fraud. And there'll be clear evidence, and it'll be clearly understandable that there's been propaganda waged upon them, including some of the things we've talked today, a propaganda against treating COVID. And then almost certainly what's called mass negligent homicide, meaning people died because of this. And there's just clear examples of it. Some of it's been very intentional. So for instance, remdesivir, everyone should understand this. Remdesivir was one of the first emergency use authorized drugs that we had. And the clinical trials came in, it didn't look good. More people died with remdesivir, kidney failure, liver injury. The World Health Organization held a meeting, very important meeting. They called everybody in. They had ethicists, and this is in 2020. They said, listen, this is not looking good. They concluded, do not use remdesivir. They put out a statement, do not use it. European Society of Critical Care said, do not use it. But the U.S. had already created this financial bonus system for health system administrators. They got 20% bonus on every admission if they would actually use remdesivir. Now, when we use an antibiotic in the hospital, Jim, we don't get a bonus over the whole hospital bill. We don't know why that financial incentive was created. It seems very, very intentional, very disproportionate. If someone has a $200,000 bill, that means you get $40,000 extra for using remdesivir, which is a $3,000 drug. It seems perverse, but you know what? Hospitals did it anyway. Even though it caused harm, hospitals administered remdesivir to Americans. And Americans are furious. So many people died in the hospital with remdesivir. So that's an example of just, honestly, that's just, it's going to come out to be negligent homicide. There's no other way around it. They couldn't continue to give remdesivir when the study showed it didn't work. And you had the major public health body saying, don't use it.
You know, it's amazing because through the Freedom of Information Act, there's been documents released by Pfizer. They didn't want to release it for 75 years. In the first dump that came out through, I guess it was in February, they noted that the number of individuals that died, I think there was 42,082 adverse events, 1,223 deaths. And they noted that in 1976, with the swine flu vax, it was pulled off the market after 25 deaths. And there's 9 pages of adverse events of special interest, 158,000 of them. Goodness knows what we're going to find out when the other documents are released. But it was amazing. They were given immunity, and they tried to hide these documents. So what were they hiding?
The most worrisome thing in that whole disclosure, Jim, is the lawyers for the FDA were blocking the release. The U.S. FDA was actually trying to protect Pfizer. So our government agency that's supposed to be looking out for our safety was actually intentionally trying to block documents to Americans. That's what we should really be worrying about. And you're right. Pfizer knew about 1,223 deaths within 90 days of release of their vaccine. They should have shut it down after 50 deaths. That would have been a reasonable standard. There are now several papers suggesting products are pulled off the market with far fewer deaths. The World Council for Health has listed every single major product recall from the different vaccines. By all criteria, COVID-19 vaccines should be off the market. Pfizer had to hire 600 extra employees just to handle the phone lines as people were dying with their product. So this is a real-time public health safety disaster with these products going on right now. And the FDA is complicit. The FDA is not protecting us. That means there's no protection. That means people have to protect themselves against these products, which have not made the grade for being safe.
Well, doctor, the amazing thing about me is if I know about this information and other people know about the information, why the emphasis by the administration in government for these mandates? As you said, right now, the FDA just approved vaccines for 5-year-olds and encourage young children to get it when we know they don't need it.
Senator Johnson was just on TV with me 2 days ago. And Senator Johnson has sent out 38 letters of inquiry. Why are you doing this? And no one will answer. The wheels are off the track right now. Things are unhinged in Washington. Our regulatory agencies, in a sense, have gone rogue. And you know, the media is complicit. Do you know Albert Bourla, the CEO of Pfizer, goes on news stations and they ask him and he advises on third and fourth shots. No one's asking him about the deaths. There hasn't been a single person in the media that's asked Borla, what about these 1,223 deaths? Are you going to analyze them? What happened to these people? What about their families? So the media is involved in this, Jim.
It's just absolutely, it's no wonder, Doctor, that there is a growing distrust of institutions, not just the government, the Fed, but now even medical institutions. I never thought I would see that, where I would kind of mistrust when a pharmacy doesn't honor a doctor's prescription, or when I have doctors insisting I get something or take something when I don't need it.
It's true. I can tell you, the New York Times had a piece about 2 weeks ago, front page, said 35% of Americans have not taken a vaccine or are not going to take a booster. The CDC says 82% of Americans have taken at least one shot. So that means 17 plus 18% is going to be the Venn diagram there. The bottom line is that's a third of the country, Jim. A third of the country right now is angry. And they don't want to hear a single word about these vaccines. They don't want to hear about vaccines tied to employment or to school. They don't want a doctor suggesting they should take the vaccine. And they are angry. A third of the country, every health system, every employer, every school ought to take note of that.
So in conclusion, what would you tell our listeners about COVID, staying healthy, and about vaccines?
People have to take health into their own hands. No one can make a health decision in order to make your employer happy or make your school happy, particularly when it's something permanent, like taking a genetic injection for the lethal Wuhan spike protein into your body. We know now we can't get the vaccine out of the body. We can't get the spike protein out of the body. So people have to take matters into their own hands. Everybody has bodily autonomy. You decide what goes inside your body. The best defenses we've learned are the nasal virucidal washes, dilute povidone iodine, dilute hydrogen peroxide. Remember, very dilute. These things should not sting or burn. Nasal hygiene is going to protect best against infections. Vitamin D, the best supplement around. Getting fresh air, exercising, very important. And when people do get COVID-19, nowadays it's so mild, it doesn't need any treatment. However, high-risk patients, seniors, those with medical conditions like diabetes, obesity, asthma, heart failure, emphysema, cancers, get early treatment. The McCullough protocol or sequence multi-drug therapy clearly works. 95% estimated now protection against hospitalization and death. And there are good parts to the government response, including the monoclonal antibodies, including Paxlovid, including molnupiravir. We certainly use ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, no problems there. And don't forget the other drugs. No drug is good enough alone. That's what we've learned. People have said, oh, there's Paxlovid rebound. Laura Ingram asked me about that. I said, listen, I've never even used ivermectin alone. We always use drugs in combination. That's the mistake. Don't rely on a single miracle drug. Use drugs in combination. And for those who have had the virus or the vaccine or both, be on the lookout for problems, particularly cardiovascular events and other problems. We're seeing a lot of them right now. Both the virus and the vaccine can provoke things downstream. The best would be to avoid the vaccine so at least you don't have that additional exposure to worry about.
Doctor, I want to thank you for joining us on the program. The name of the book is called The Courage to Face COVID-19. Preventing hospitalization and death while battling the biopharmaceutical complex. Doctor, thanks so much for joining us. We always appreciate you coming and alerting our investors and keeping them informed.
Thanks for having me.
The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies mentioned in Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Please be advised that you invest at your own risk.